This is a great chapter in Ecclesiastes. It really has some super principles about life. And it kind of divides itself into three sections. And each of those sections talks about a different group of people who, for whatever reason, can't enjoy life. And the first group are those who are oppressed. Those who are oppressed. And that's in the first three verses. So let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 4, the first three verses. Solomon says, "Then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, but they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors there is power, but they have no comforter. Therefore I praise the dead who are already dead more than the living who are still alive. Yet better than both is he who has never existed, who has not seen the evil work that is done under the sun." And this, of course, all has to be taken in context and seeing how Solomon is seeing these things. So this first group, he says, can't enjoy life because they are oppressed. Because they are oppressed. When you read this, especially the first verse, you can really feel Solomon's sympathy for these people. I mean, he feels their pain because they're in a situation that they can't help. People who are oppressed, for the most part, can't do anything about being oppressed. And basically that's because usually people are oppressed due to people who are powerful. In other words, they're oppressed, as Solomon says, by those who have power. Now, this can be in any area of life. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of people who get in a position of power that have no idea how to use it right. And that's one of the types of people he's talking about. People who get power for whatever reason and in whatever area of life, who use that power wrongfully. And of course, you know, our society is filled with people who use power wrongfully. So Solomon is addressing those individuals in this first chapter. And he feels the people who are oppressed, he feels their pain because they can't do anything about it. And that's true in our society as well. You know, certain people in certain areas get power and they have the say-so. And sometimes they make a very irrational decisions, or they make decisions to make themselves feel good, or they don't like a group of people, so they do that. And of course, that was one of the main reasons back in Solomon's time, is the powerful would oppress certain groups of people who they didn't like for some reason. And so Solomon here is feeling their pain. And it's easy. You know, you just read the Bible from front to back, and it's easy for people who have power to abuse it. And those people, Solomon, are addressing here. Those who have been abused by the powerful. And that's something that's never going to stop. I mean, that's been around since the beginning. And as long as there are people with power, some of them will abuse it. And so Solomon, like I said, feels for them. He says, I returned and considered. I'm looking at all these things that are done under the sun. See, if everybody practiced, you know, godly principles in the Bible and lived by them, there would not be any oppression. So that's why he says this is under the sun, because that's the only place oppression can take place, is under the sun. In other words, in a world, in a life without God, that's the only kind of circumstance that there can be oppression. So whenever powerful people abuse their power and abuse their authority, we know that's happening under the sun. In other words, that's happening without God, because God never approves of any type of abuse or oppression. We'll read a few places here in a little bit, but you just look at the law of Moses and look at all the places where God talks about oppression. I mean, over and over and over again, he talks about oppression and how wrong it is and how he's with those who are oppressed. So let's read a couple of verses in the Old Testament here. First of all, let's go back to Psalm 69. Psalm 69, let's see. And would someone read verse 20? Psalm 69, verse 20.
Reproach has broken my heart, and I am full of heaviness. I looked for someone to take pity, but there was none. And for comforters, but I found none.
Okay. This is considered to be a psalm of David, one of those times in David's life when someone in power was in some way oppressing him, or that had the upper hand. We can kind of think about it in that sense. Someone who has the upper hand was heaping scorn upon him, rebuking him, reproaching him, and he had done nothing wrong. Okay? And if you live in this world, that will happen sometime in your life. Someone who has the upper hand, someone who has power, someone who has authority will in some way abuse that toward you. And it may be real small or slight, or it might be something rather major. But either way, you know, David here in this psalm is relating to that. He can feel that because he was scorned and reproached wrongfully. So he knows how people feel about that. He says, I have a broken heart. I'm full of heaviness. He says, I'm looking for someone to take pity, to have compassion, to comfort him. But there was a point in his life where he couldn't find anybody to do that. Now, kind of on kind of similar vein, Psalm 142. Let's go to Psalm 142. Verse 4. Someone read that, Psalm 142, verse 4. This is also considered to be a psalm of David.
I looked on my right hand and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuse failed me. No man cared for my soul.
So you kind of feel the same emotion that he had back there in Psalm 69. You know, he was looking for someone to help him, to comfort him, to, you know, feel that kinship with him, to help him through that time. But he said at that time, I couldn't find anybody. He wanted to find someone, and he couldn't. And we'll read some, I think, more positive things maybe later on about these situations. But, you know, most people will at some time in their life be in that situation. And that's in Solomon here, is writing from that standpoint. Then in verse 2, he says, therefore I praise the dead who were already dead, more than the living who are still alive. And again, he's talking about because people will experience this oppression and this almost persecution, this reproach, he says, looking at it under the sun, he says it would be better if they were already dead. That way, you know, the dead aren't oppressed. See, that's the way he's looking at it. The dead aren't oppressed. So he said it would be almost better not to have to suffer this oppression. And he said it would be even better possibly if we were, if they were dead. So he's so outraged. And of course, oppression is always unjust. So he's so outraged at this injustice, this cruelty that oppression is, that he says, you know, it's almost better if they weren't even alive than have to go through this this situation. So he was in, I guess, a bad emotional state, I guess you might say, when he was saying this. And then, even worse, you might say, verse 3, yet better than both is he who has never existed, who's not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. And again, you have to think Solomon's reference point or frame of reference is living in this world apart from God. Because the person who was never born would never experience this type of reproach and scorn and oppression. So that's the way Solomon is looking at it. But he's looking at it, you know, from that kind of frame of mind, would be better off. You know, and life would be miserable for us, you know, if there wasn't a hope of heaven and a hope of eternal life and a hope of being in heaven forever. You know, life would be pretty miserable if you didn't have that hope, regardless of what happened to you in this world. So that's why life, if it's always viewed under the sun, is a pretty miserable existence. And so those people who have no plans or don't maybe even believe in an afterlife, you know, no wonder they'll do anything imaginable in this world to try and find some sort of happiness or contentment. And they'll go to great lengths to, I cannot say that word, to find that so-called happiness or contentment. Let's see. Job chapter 3. Let's go back to Job chapter 3 for a minute. We know that Job certainly had all types of discouraging circumstances. Let's see. Job says kind of the same type of thing. Job chapter 3, beginning in verse 16. Job says this. Or why was I not hidden like a stillborn child, like infants who never saw light? There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They do not hear the voice of the oppressor. The small and great are there, and the servant is free from his master. Why is light given to him who is in misery, and life to the bitter of soul, who long for death, but it does not come, and search for it more than hidden treasures? Who rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave. Job is looking at life under the sun there. And when he's saying those things, that's a life under the sun. See, he's not, you know, this is right after all these things have happened to him, and so he's quite miserable at his existence. He's seen all the cruelty and the injustices and all these things, and he feels like his life, you know, is just practically over. So that's why he says, you know, it'd be better not to even be born than have to experience these things. Well, that's thinking about life under the sun. That's not thinking about life in heaven or in an afterlife or anything else. That's just thinking about life in this world. And that's a miserable existence. It always would be. You know, if we don't have hope, like Paul said, the Apostle Paul, if we don't have hope, we're of all men the most to be pitied. And yet that's the majority of the people in the world don't have hope. They don't. They don't have any hope at all. And, of course, that has gotten worse over the years. So no wonder, you know, we see so many problems associated with emotional strain and emotional stress and so forth in our world. Because a lot of people don't have any hope. And there's nothing for them to be grounded on or in. There's nothing there for them. So they have nothing. So that's one category of people, he says, can't enjoy life. Those who are oppressed. Now he turns to a different group, beginning in verse 4. I don't know what I call these people. Let's see. Verse 4 through 6. Let's look here a second. Let's read that first. Beginning in verse 4 of Ecclesiastes 4. Again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. The fool holds his hands and consumes his own flesh. Better a handful with quietness than both hands full, together with toil and grasping for the wind. The people who can't enjoy life are the people who live those who live for this life only. Notice what these people do. Some characteristics of them in these three verses. He says, first of all, again, I considered all this. This is what I saw, that for all the toil, the work, the skillful work, which is an interesting translation of the Hebrew there, a man is envied by his neighbor. We'll talk about envy in a minute. He says, but this is vanity. Remember, the idea is it's empty and it's useless, and you're just grasping for the wind. Those who are, and he talked about this in the first chapter too, those who seek happiness by things of this life, wealth and possessions and power and so forth, are not going to find happiness. So those people who live for just this life, in other words, they're living under the sun entirely, and their whole life is just about their work, just about their work, they will never find happiness. Simply because wealth can't do that. It's useless to spend your whole life just getting more and more and more. He says you'll find nothing there. At the end of your life, you'll have nothing. Because everything you accumulated, everything you've done, all your work will be for nothing. If that's all you've done. Now, he of course, is not denouncing work, obviously. As the next verse says. But he is saying that if you're just to your work and that's all you're concerned about, period, nothing else, you're just living in this for this life only, then you're going to have a miserable existence. Because when it's over, it's over. You have nothing. You've wasted your life. He says some will cause, as he says, envy. You know, we might envy someone's new car, someone's new house, someone's new position, someone's new this, someone's new that. But when it's over, that car was going to be rusted and a pile of junk someday. The house will fall down or be burned up or, you know, it'll rot. All of those things. See, none of those things are lasting. So if we envy somebody for those things, we're envying things that don't last. They're corruptible. So he's saying, you know, you're also wasting your time to do that because they don't last. Why spend your time and energy and worry and be anxious about people who have better things than you when those things are just for this life? And that's it. They're done. Tremendous lesson. A couple things about envy. Let's look at Proverbs for a moment. A couple of Proverbs about envy that I think are pretty good. Proverbs 14 first. Proverbs 14, verse 30. Would someone read that? That's a big smile. Yes, it is, Lorelai. That's a big smile. I mean, it was an ear-to-ear smile. See, I have an advantage over all of you. Verse 30, does someone have that?
A sound heart is life to the body, but envy is rottenness to the bones.
Isn't that the truth? Boy, I mean, envy just eats you from the inside out, doesn't it? It just eats you from the inside out. And that, you know, if that's how you live your life, you know, you're always going to be miserable. Because, believe it or not, there's always going to be somebody that has nicer things than you do. I mean, it doesn't make any difference how much you end up getting. There's always going to be nicer ones. You just watch TV for a while, you know, and you'll find those people who have nicer things than you very quickly. So he says it'll just eat you alive. And then Proverbs 23. This time, verse 17. Proverbs 23, verse 17. Someone read that, please.
Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord
Okay? Don't let your heart envy sinners. Wow. Because it is. It'll just, as he says, it'll just kind of eat you alive. What you need to, you know, what we really need to be focusing on in this life is preparing for the next. And the type of work that we really need to be concerned about is, like 1 Corinthians, it's 3 or 4, talks about the kind of the building we're making. You know, what are we making it out of? A silver, gold, something solid, or is it straw and hay and stubble? You know, in other words, the people that we relate to and we interact with, that we have relationships with, are we helping them come to Christ? You know, what are we doing in our lives with them? Because that's the kind of life we're building. Which is it? Is it the hay and stubble and stuff? Or is it the gold and the silver? Which is it we're doing? And that's what Solomon is addressing here as well. What kind of work is it that's important to you? Is it the work in this world of getting more and more stuff and having the better things? Or is it focusing on, you know, seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness first? That's what he wants to know. Which have you decided to do? And in verse 5, he mentions, this is what the fool does. See, in verse 4, we kind of see the guy who is kind of past being a workaholic. There is such a thing. He's a workaholic plus, and he's very concerned about his work in this world and just focusing on the work and his toil. Now, in verse 5, we have the guy that's totally apathetic about it. So we have both extremes in this section. But both people really are still living just in this life because neither one's preparing for the next. This one, the fool folds his hands. He's not doing anything. I mean, he's not trying to produce any kind of work at all. He's just kind of sitting back, being lazy and slothful. And that's it. He's not doing anything. So Solomon says neither one of those extremes is right. You're not supposed to just, you know, be lazy and slothful. And you're not supposed to be a workaholic and devote your whole life to work. He says there is a middle point that you need to find. Find that middle ground and stay there. If you want to find any type of happiness, both of the extremes are not any type of place to find happiness at all. Because he says the fool consumes his own flesh. And in some other translations, the idea is that you're ruining your own life. See, a fool who just folds his hands and does nothing in life is really ruining his life. That's what he's doing. By doing nothing, you're destroying your life. So we don't want to be at either extreme. I think that's what Solomon wants us to know. Both extremes we need to avoid. And sometimes it may be easy to kind of start going one way or the other. And it's probably pretty hard to stay right in the middle where you need to be. But that's where Solomon says you need to be. Otherwise, you'll end up destroying yourself. And then he ends up this section, better is a handful with quietness, you know, with peace, contentment, no worries, no anxieties. So better is a handful, a little bit, than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. So it's better to have a smaller amount with contentment and peace and no worries about it than to have a whole lot of stuff that comes with a lot of baggage. All sorts of worries and anxieties and, you know, that's all you're concentrating on is all this stuff. So he says there's something to be said, again, for just having the small amount. Let's go back to Proverbs for a moment. Proverbs 15. Yeah, verse 16. Would someone read that? Proverbs 15, verse 16.
Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble.
That's right. Better is a little, you know, considering the circumstances, than have a whole lot when you're just living under the sun and you're living apart from God. So it'll just bring nothing but trouble. You know, that's what Paul said. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Great gain. It's hard to do. You know, he said we brought nothing into this world, and that's exactly what we're going to take out. So, one person I read this week, didn't write the name down, he says, if you strive for success, you must also strive for contentment. So, contentment is something you have to strive for. You know, our country is definitely not a country filled with contented people. That's for sure. I mean, you're lucky if you find one out of 50 people that's contented.
Bobby, does that live through their life? Is that the people that say they're going to stay on this earth, they ain't leaving?
Well, I mean, anybody would be in that category that thinks this is it, you know, and there isn't anything beyond this world.
Going down there or up there.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, this is it for them. That's all they think there is. So that's why they think they have to get it all now. That's what this life is. It's all about now. Pardon? Oh, I thought I heard something. Okay. So a couple other quotes that are really good. I could tell you that I made them up, but you'd know that that wasn't the case. Ambition is the raving and insatiable beast that most often demands to be fed. Boy, that is true. Ambition can be a beast. Can be a beast that is always hungry. Again, you know, if that drives you, you're never satisfied. There'll never come a point where you're satisfied. Or even if you're, you know, there's nothing wrong, like we talked about, sort of about having success. If at each stage is success, you're content with where you are. But if you're always wanting more, then you'll never, ever be satisfied. Because there isn't any place where you can say, yeah, I've made it. Nope. Doesn't exist. So if that's what drives you, then you'll never, ever be satisfied. You'll always be disappointed in life. The other one was about a guy said, I'm going to quit the rat race because the rats keep getting faster and stronger. Boy, that's the truth. And they are. They're getting faster and stronger and whatever. So I think the lesson then in this second part is nothing wrong with being successful or having things if you're always content with whatever it is you have, and that you're not being driven to always want more and more and more. You know, having the smaller amount with peace and contentment, Solomon says, is much, much better than having a whole lot which comes with worries and anxieties and fears and all these other things. And you find that with people who, you know, have kind of given their whole life to that. And you'll find that kind of toward the end of their life, they have nothing but what they've worked for in this life. And they end up being very miserable. Yes?
There's a couple items in the bulletin Sunday that fit right in with this lesson. One was I forgot to live. It says, first I was dying to finish high school and start college. And then I was dying to finish college and start working. Then I was dying to marry and have children. And then I was dying for my children to grow old enough for school so I could return to work. And then I was dying to retire. And now I am dying to suddenly realize I forgot to live.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The other one is the secret of happiness is not getting more, but in wanting less.
Yep. Yep. And that's a fight in our society. Because our society says wanting less is not good. It's wanting more. That's what our society tells us. Well, again, it's good to see everybody. Glad you were able to get out. Our lesson here in this class was about what living in this world is about or should be about. And the people who are miserable in life, who can never find joy or happiness, are those people who live under the sun, who live without God. You know, we talked about in verse 5 about what the fool does. The fool holds his hands. Well, also, the Old Testament tells us that the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So people who live without God are foolish. Even though they look down on people who believe in God, they will one day realize that their whole life was based on a lie. I mean, regardless of how long they live, when this life is over, they realize that their whole life was based on a lie. That there is a God, that there is a time of accounting, that there is a judgment, that there is a place of persecution or pain and torment. Even though they lived their whole life not believing a word of that, they will find out that they were terribly, terribly wrong. But the bad part is they can't do anything about it then. You know, God has given us whatever time we have to make preparation for the next life, because this is meant to be temporary. This is just a temporary place that we live for a little while, and our sole reason here is to determine where we go in the next life, which is eternal. So what we do in this world determines where we go in the next. Decisions like becoming a Christian, a child of God, living a faithful life, being the right kind of neighbor and spouse and parent and child and employee and so forth. All those type of relationships. Those are the kind of decisions then that will determine where we spend eternity. And so tonight, David's going to lead us in a song in just a moment, inviting us to think about our destiny, how we're living, and what kind of decisions we're making. If you need to become a child of God, if you need to maybe confess wrong and ask for prayers, then we encourage you to come as David leads us in this song.